The function of God is the focus. An intense mental state is impossible, unless there be something, or the illusion of something, to center upon. Given any other equally serviceable concentration device, prayers are unnecessary. I conceive of the magic of prayers. I conceive of the magic of blasphemies. There is witchcraft in religion, there may be witchcraft in atheism. In the New York Evening World, September 19, 1930, is an account of joy in Naples, the shouts of crowds, and the ringing of church bells. In the Cappella del Tesoro Cathedral had been displayed the phial containing the blood of St. Januarius. It had boiled. It is my notion that, if intenser than the faith in Naples, had been a desire for a frustration of this miracle, the blood of St. Januarius might have frozen. Upon the 5th of March, 1931, see the New York Herald Tribune, March 6th, 15,000 worshippers were kneeling, at a pontifical high mass, in the municipal plaza, at San Antonio, Texas. Considering the intense antagonism to Catholicism in Mexico, at this time, one thinks of the presence of some of this feeling in San Antonio. From a palm tree, the topmost tuft fell into the kneeling congregation. Six persons were taken to the hospital. My general expression is that some of the reported phenomena that are called miracles probably have occurred, but have been arbitrarily taken over by the religionists, though they are the exclusive properties of priests no more than of traveling salesmen. That scientists have been repelled by the reported phenomena, because of a fear of contamination from priestcraft, but that any scientist who preaches the ideals of science, and also lets fear of contaminations influence him is as false to his preachments as ever any priest has been. See the New York Herald Tribune, December 6, 1931, an account of the opening, in Goa, Portuguese India, of the coffin of Saint Francis Xavier. A special emissary, sent by Pope Pius XI, led the ceremonial procession, in which marched three archbishops, 15 bishops, and hundreds of other members of the clergy. A throng of 10,000 persons heard the papal mass and benediction, in the Church of Don Jesus. The congregation passed before the coffin, and kissed the dead saint's feet. But there have been scientists, especially medical scientists, who, in spite of contaminations, have not been held back from investigations. In January 1932, the New York newspapers told that many miracles had been reported in Goa. There is no opposition, as sheer, to witchcraft, by religionists. It is competition. 24. Our only important opposition is, not science, but a belief that we are in conflict with science. This is an old-fashioned belief. There is nothing told of in this book that is more of an affront to old-time dogmas than is the theory of the Nobel Prize winner, Dr. Bohr, that the sun is deriving its energy from nowhere. The quantum theory is a doctrine of magic. The idea of playing leapfrog, without having to leap over the other frog, is simply another representation of the idea of entering a closed room without passing through the walls. But there is a big difference between authoritative pronouncements and my expressions. It is the difference between subatomic events and occurrences in boarding houses. The difference is in many minds unlike my mind, to which all things are phenomena, and to which all records are, or may be, data, in which electrons and protons are dignified little things, whereas boarders and tramps on park benches can't be taken solemnly. Charles Darwin was similarly received when, in the place of academic speculations upon evolution, he treated of bugs and bones and insides of animals. Not, of course, that I mean anything by anything. Quantum magic is a doctrine of discontinuity. So it seems to be opposed to my expressions upon hyphenation, which seem to be altogether a philosophy of continuity. But I have indicated that also I hyphenate in another dimension. I conceive of all phenomena as representing continuity in one dimension, and as representing discontinuity in another dimension, that is, all phenomena as interdependent and bound up with one another, or continuous, and at the same time so individualized that nothing is exactly like anything else, or that everything is alone, or discontinuous. I conceive of our existence as one organic state, or being, that is an individual, or that is unrelated to anything else, such as other existences, in the cosmos, its state of oneness expressing in the continuity of its internal phenomena, and its state of individuality, or apartness from everything else in the cosmos, expressing in a permeation of that individuality, or discontinuity, throughout its phenomena. Of course, if the word cosmos means organized universality, I misuse the word here. For various reasons I let it stand. There are hosts of persons, who consider themselves up to date, or ahead of that, who bandy arguments in the latest, scientific lingo, and believe anything that they're told to believe of electrons, but would be incapable of extending an idea from electrons to borders even though they argue that every border is only a composition of electrons and go right on thinking of affairs, in general, in old-fashioned, materialistic terms. Well, then, in old-fashioned terms, what had I this morning for breakfast? I think, therefore I had breakfast. If no line of demarcation can be drawn between one's breakfasts and one's thoughts, or between a cereal and a cerebration, this is the continuity of the material and the immaterial. If there is no material, as absolutely differentiated from the immaterial, what becomes of any opposition from what may still survive of what is called materialistic science? Science is systematized and formulated knowledge. Then anybody who has systematized and formulated knowledge enough to appear, on time, at the breakfast table, is, to that degree, a scientist. There are scientific dogs. Most of them have a great deal of systematized and formulated knowledge. Cats and rabbits and all those irritating South American rodents that were discovered by crossword puzzle makers are scientists. A magnet scientifically picks out and classifies iron filings from a mass of various materials. Science does not exist, as a distinguishable entity. Our data have been upon witchcraft in love affairs, in small-town malices, and occasional murders of no importance. According to the phantom, materialistic science, there is no witchcraft. In the monistic sense, I agree. Witchcraft is so bound up with other natural forces, that it cannot be picked out, as having independent existence. But, in terms of common illusions, I accept that there is witchcraft, and, just for the sake of seeming to have opposition, which makes for more interest, I pretend that there is science. Stars and planets and ultraviolet radiations from the sun, Paleolithic and Neolithic interrelationships, and zymotic multiplications, and tetrahedronic equilaterality. And the little Caldwell girl, who kept the fireman busy and a kid named Rena got a haircut. There was a house in which a pan of soft soap wandered from room to room, a woman alone in a compartment of a railway train, and then maybe she wasn't alone. The disdain of any academic scientist if among the sensationalists of today, there survive an academic scientist for what I call the data of witchcraft. And now my subject is witchcraft in science. In the year 1913, the German scientist, Emil Abderhalden, announced his discovery of the synthesis of inorganic materials into edible substances. It was said that to avoid all uncertainties this back in those supreme old days when all scientists were certain this announcement had been long delayed. But experiments had been successes. Dogs fed upon synthetic foods had gained weight astonishingly, as compared with dogs that had been fed ordinary meals. Reports were much tabulated. Statistics very statistical. Then came the war. If Dr. Abderhalden, or anybody else in Germany, could out of muds of various kinds have produced those alleged meals, perhaps we'd all be fighting to this day. As it is, we have had a rest, and can do the necessary breeding, before again starting up atrocities. So, at least for the sake of vigorous new abominations, it seems to be just as well that some of the widely advertised scientific successes aren't so successful. But the dogs got fat. There is scarcely an annual meeting of any prominent scientific association at which are not made, by eminent doctors and professors, announcements of great discoveries that, by long and careful experimentation, constructive and eliminative tests, and guards against all possible sources of error, have been established. A year or so later, these boons to suffering humanity are forgotten. Almost always these announcements are not especially questioned, and bring no confusion upon their sponsors. There is much scientific caution. A scientist doesn't know but that he may make an announcement, himself, someday. But about the middle of July, 1931, Professor Wilhelm Gluod, of the Westphalian University of Munster, was not received with the usual caution. Professor Gluod announced these professors never merely say anything that synthetic albumin could be produced from coal. This dreamery was attacked, and later, in July, Professor Gluod admitted that he had been premature in his announcement. But something had convinced a scientist, of international reputation, so that he had risked that reputation by making his announcement. So one inclines to think. If he had made no experiments, and had simply and irresponsibly squawked into publicity, we have some more monism, and can draw no line between a Westphalian professor and any Coney Island barker. But, if he did make experiments, and, if, in spite of later developments, which showed that, according to chemical principles, success was impossible, he nevertheless had reasons to believe that some of his experiments were successes. These successes that agreed with his theory were realizations of his imaginings.